Vivenna presented her coin.
One bet. That's all. One single bet.
Cads was among the dirtiest men she'd met, even in the streets. He liked fancy clothing, though. It was his style. Worn and dirty clothing in the latest designs. He seemed to think it was funny, a mockery of the highborn.
One bet.
Please.
Cads and Vivenna stood at the mouth of an alley at the back of two restaurants. Just inside the alley, she could see urchins rooting in the garbage. Fresh garbage from two restaurants. She salivated.
I find it hard to believe, lady girl, that this is all you made today.
Please, Cads, you know I don't beg well.
You should do better. Even the children can bring me at least two.
Behind him, the fortunates who had pleased him continued to feast. It smelled so good. Or maybe that was the restaurants.
I haven't eaten in days.
Then do better tomorrow. Go on now.
My coin.
Cads immediately waved for his tufts as she reached toward him. Vivenna shied away reflexively, stumbling.
Two tomorrow. I have to pay the restaurant owners, you know. Can't let you eat for free.
Vivenna stood, staring at him. Not because she thought she could get him to change his mind, but because she just had trouble making her mind understand. It was her last chance for food this day. One bit wouldn't buy anything more than a mouthful elsewhere. But here, last time, it had allowed her to eat until she was full. That had been weeks ago. How long had she been on the streets now? She didn't know. She turned dully and pulled her shawl tight. It was dusk. She would go beg some more. She couldn't. Not after losing that bit. She felt shaken, as if her most valuable possession had been stolen.
No. No.
She still had that. She pulled the shawl close. Why was it important? She had trouble remembering. Vivenna shuffled back toward the Highlands, her home. A part of her realized that she shouldn't feel so distant from the person she had been. She was a princess, wasn't she? But she felt so sick lately. Sick enough that she didn't even think she could feel the hunger anymore. It was all so wrong. So very, very wrong. She entered the slums and crept along, careful to keep her head bowed, her back cowed, lest someone take offense at her. She hesitated as she walked, however, passing a street to her right. It was where the whores waited, protected from the drizzle by an awning. Vivenna stared at them, standing in their revealing clothing. It was only two streets into the slum, a place that wasn't too threatening for outsiders. Everyone knew not to rob a man on his way to visit the whores. The slumlords didn't like it when their customers got scared away. Bad for business, as Dent might say. Vivenna stood for a long moment. The whores looked fed. They weren't dirty. She could join them. An urchin had spoken of it the other day, mentioned that she was still young. He'd wanted her to come to the slumlord with him, hoping to get some coin for recruiting a willing girl. It was so tempting. Food. Warmth. A dry bed.
Blessed Ostri, what am I thinking? What is wrong with my mind?
It was so hard to focus, as if she were in a trance all the time. Vivenna forced herself to keep moving, stumbling away from the women. She wouldn't do that. Not yet. Not yet.
Oh, Lord of Colors, I need to get out of this city. Better for me to die. Starving on the road back to Idris. Better to get taken by Dent and tortured than to end up in the brothel.
However, much like the morality of stealing, the morality of using her body seemed much vaguer to her now, when her hunger was such a constant need. She made her way to her latest alleyway. She'd been kicked out of the others, but this one was good. It was secluded, yet often filled with younger urchins. Her company made her feel better, though she knew they searched her at night for coins.
I can't believe how tired I am.
The alleyway was empty. Everyone else staying out in the evening to try for a few extra coins. She took the best of the spots, an earthen mound which had managed to grow a small tuft of grass. There weren't even that many lumps in the dirt, though it would be wet with mud from the light rain. She didn't care about that.
Oh.
Shadows darkened the alleyway behind her. Vivenna started to run. Then another shadow stepped across the other end of the alley ahead of her. Vivenna froze, then turned to see a group of thugs moving up the alleyway behind her. At their back was the man who had robbed her a few weeks ago, the one who had taken her dress.
I'm so sorry, Princess. Bounty just got too high. Took me blasting long enough to find you, though. You did a great job of hiding.
Vivenna blinked, and then she simply let herself slide down to the ground.
I just can't take it anymore.
She was exhausted, mentally, emotionally, completely. The thugs clustered around her.
Let's get her to Denth and be done with it.
No.
Rough hands grabbed her arm, towing her to her feet. Vivenna followed with head bowed. They led her out onto the main street. It was growing dim, but no urchins or beggars made their way toward the alley.
I should have realized it was too deserted.
Everything finally overwhelmed her. The thugs stopped walking. Vivenna looking up, blinking away her dizziness. There was something in the dark, wet street in front of them. A black sword. The weapon, silver sheath and all, had been rammed into the dirt. One of the thugs stepped forward, pulling the sword from the ground. He undid the sheath clasp. Vivenna felt a sudden nausea, more of a memory than a real sensation.
No!
Vivenna stumbled back, horrified. The other thugs, transfixed, gathered up around their friend. One of them reached for the hilt. The man carrying the sword struck. He swung the weapon, sheath and all, into the face of his friend. The black smoke began to twist off the sword, rising from the tiny sliver of blade that was visible. Each of the men scrambled for the sword. The man holding it continued to swing, the weapon hitting with far more force and damage than it should have. Bones broke. Blood began to run onto the cobblestones. The man continued to attack, moving with terrible speed. Vivenna, still stumbling backward, could see his eyes. They were terrified. The thug killed his last friend, the one who had robbed her on that day that now seemed so long ago, by slamming the sheathed sword down against the man's back. The clothing on the sword's wielder's arm had disintegrated, and a blackness like vines growing on a wall had twisted up around his shoulder. Black, pulsing veins that bulged out of the skin. Then he twisted the sword around and rammed it, sheath and all, through his own chest.
Oh, Ostri!
Vivenna stood alone on a street littered with corpses. A figure descended from a rooftop, lowered by two twisting lengths of animated rope. He landed softly, ropes falling dead. He passed Vivenna, ignoring her, and grabbed the sword. He paused for a moment, then did up the clasp. Vivenna stared dully ahead, then numb, she sat down in the street. She didn't even flinch as Vasher picked her up and slung her over his shoulder.
Her Grace is not interested in seeing you.
Well, I'm not interested in her uninterest. Perhaps you should ask her again, just to be sure.
The priestess bowed her head.
My pardons, Your Grace, but I have already asked 14 times. Goddess Allmother is growing impatient with your requests, and she instructed me not to respond to them anymore.
Did she give the same command to the other priestesses?
Well, no, Your Grace.
Wonderful. Send for one of them. Then send her to ask Allmother if she will see me.
Lightsong considered the priestess' sigh something of a victory. Allmother's priests were among the most pious and most humble in the court. If he could annoy them, he could annoy anyone. He waited, hands on hips, as the priestess went to do his bidding. Allmother could give them orders and commands, but she couldn't tell them to completely ignore Lightsong. After all, He was a god, too. As long as he asked them to do something other than what All-Mother had explicitly forbidden, they had to obey, even if it annoyed their goddess.
Ah, I'm developing a new skill. Irritation by proxy.
What about your speech to Goddess Blushweaver a few days ago, Your Grace? It seemed to imply that you were not going to annoy people as much.
I said nothing of the sort, Larimar. I simply said that I was coming to recognize within myself a little more of the person I used to be. That doesn't mean I'm going to discard all the progress I've made over the last few years.
Your sense of self-awareness is remarkable, Your Grace.
I know. Now, hush. The priestess is coming back.
Indeed, the woman approached and bowed before Lightsong on the grass.
My apologies, Your Grace. Our goddess, however, has now requested that no priestess be allowed to ask her if you can come in to see her.
Oh, did she tell them that they couldn't ask if she would come out here?
Yes, Your Grace. And every other phrasing that would imply asking her to come within Your Grace's proximity, or communicate with him by letter, or relay messages from him in any form.
Hmm. She's getting better. Well, I guess there's nothing to be done. Scoot, set up my pavilion here in front of a palace. I'm going to be sleeping here tonight.
You're going to do what?
I'm not moving until I meet with her. That means staying until she acknowledges me. It's been over a week. If she wants to be stubborn, then I'll prove that I can be equally stubborn.
Lightsong eyed the princess.
I'm quite practiced at it, you know. Comes from being an insufferable buffoon and all. I don't suppose she forbade you from allowing squirrels into the building.
Squirrels, Your Grace.
Excellent.
Lightsong sat down as his servants erected the pavilion. He pulled the lifeless squirrel from its box and held it forward.
Almond grass.
This was the new command he'd had his people imprint on the lifeless.
Go into the building, search out the returned who lives in it, and run around in circles squeaking as loudly as you can. Don't let anyone catch you. And destroy as much furniture as you can. Almond grass.
The squirrel immediately jumped off his hand and shot toward the palace. The priestess twisted her head to follow it. The squirrel disappeared into the building, slipping between the legs of a startled guard.
What a delightful afternoon it's becoming.
Lightsong reached for a handful of grapes as the priestess rushed off after the squirrel.
Stop!
It won't be able to follow all of those orders, Your Grace. It has the mind of a squirrel, despite the power that breath gives it to obey commands.
We shall see.
It took longer than he had expected. All-Mother was stubborn, as proved by Blushweaver's complete inability to manipulate her. Several hours passed. He didn't eat or drink very much, so he didn't need to visit the privy. Finally, a frazzled-looking priestess came out of the palace.
Her Grace will see you.
Hmm? Oh, that. Do I have to go now? I was so enjoying the afternoon.
My lord, I...
Oh, very well then.
All-Mother was still in her audience chamber. Lightsong hesitated in the doorway. He frowned to himself. People still waited in a line, and All-Mother sat on a throne at the front of the room. She was stocky for a goddess, and he had always considered her white hair and wrinkled face an oddity within the pantheon. In bodily age, she was the oldest of the gods. It had been a while since he'd come to visit her. In fact,
the last time I was here was the night before Colmseer gave up a breath. That evening, 2 years ago, when we shared what would be her last meal.
He'd never come back. What would have been the point? They'd only gotten together in the first place because of Calmseer. On most of those occasions, All-Mother had been quite vocal about what she thought of Lightsong. At least she was honest. That was more than he could say for himself. She didn't acknowledge him as he entered. She continued to sit, a little stooped over, listening to the man presenting his petition. He was middle-aged and stood awkwardly, leaning on a walking staff.
My children are starving now. I cannot afford the food. I figured if my leg worked, I could go back to the docks.
Your faith is commendable. Tell me, how did you lose the use of your leg?
Oh, a fishing accident, Your Grace. I came down from the highlands a few years back when early frost took my crops. I took a job on one of the Stormrunners, the ships who go out during the spring tempests, catching fish when the others remain in the harbor. The accident crushed a barrel against me leg. Nobody will take me on to work the boats, not with a lame leg.
Allmother nodded.
I wouldn't have come to you, but my wife sick and my daughter crying with such hunger.
Allmother reached a hand out, laying it on the man's shoulder.
I understand your difficulties, but your problems are not as severe as you may think. Go and speak with my high priest. I have a man on the docks who owes my allegiance. You have two good hands. You'll be put to work sewing nets.
The man looked up, hope glimmering in his eyes.
We will send you back with enough food to care for your family until you learn your new trade. Go with my blessing.
The man rose, then fell back to his knees and began to cry.
Oh, thank you! Thank you!
Priests walked forward and led the man away. The room fell still, and Allmother looked over, meeting Lightsong's eyes. She nodded to the side, where a priest stepped up, holding a small bundle of fur tied tightly with ropes.
That is yours, I'm told.
Ah, yes. Terribly sorry. It kind of got away from me.
With an accidental command to find me, then run around in circles screaming?
Well, that actually worked. Interesting. My high priest didn't think the squirrel's brain would be capable of following such complicated commands.
Allmother regarded him with a stern look.
Oh, I mean, whoops. It completely misunderstood me. Stupid squirrel. My deepest apologies, honored sister.
Allmother waved toward a doorway on the side of the room. Lightsong walked that way and she followed. Allmother moved with the stiffness of age.
Is it me or does she look older than she did before?
That was, of course, impossible. Returned did not age, at least not the ones who had reached maturity. Once they were out of earshot and view of the petitioners, Allmother grabbed his arm.
What in the name of colors do you think you're doing?
Well, you wouldn't see me, and...
Do you intend to destroy what little authority we have left, you idiot? Already people in the city are saying that the returned are growing weak, that the best of us died years ago.
Maybe they're right.
If too many of them believe that, then we lose our access to breaths. Have you considered that? Have you considered what your lack of decorum, your flippancy, could cost all of us?
Is that the reason for the show, then?
Once the returned didn't just listen to petitions and say yes or no. They would take the time to hear each person who came to them, then seek to help them as best they could.
Seems like an awful lot of trouble.
We're their gods. Should a bit of trouble deter us? Oh, of course. We wouldn't want to let something as simple as the pains of our people interfere with our leisure time. Why am I even talking to you?
Allmother turned to leave the room.
I came to give you my lifeless commands. Blushweaver has control of two sets of the commands, which gives her control of half our armies. That worries me. I mean, I trust her as much as I trust any other returned, but if war does come, then she'll quickly become the second most powerful person in the kingdom. Only the God King would have more authority.
Allmother regarded him with an unreadable expression.
I figure that the best way to counter her is to have someone else who has two sets of commands. Perhaps it will give her pause, keep her from doing anything rash.
Calmseer trusted you.
Her one flaw, I must profess. Even goddesses have them, or so it seems. I found it gentlemanly to never point out such things.
She was the best of us. She would meet with people all day. They loved her.
Bottom line blue. That's my core security phrase. Please take it. I'll tell Blushweaver that you bullied me into giving it to you. She'll be angry at me, of course, but won't be the first time.
No. No, I'm not letting you out of this so easily, Lightsong.
What?
Can't you feel it? Something is happening in the city. This mess with the Idrians and their slums, the increasingly fierce arguments among our priests. I'm not letting you wiggle out of your part. You were chosen for that place of yours. You're a god, like the rest of us, even if you do your best to pretend otherwise.
You already have my command, oh mother.
Lai Tsong shrugged, walking toward a doorway to leave.
Do what you will with it.
Verdant bells. That's mine. Now two of us know both of them. If what you said earlier was true, then it's better that our commands be distributed.
You were just calling me a fool. Now you entrust me with command of your soldiers? I must ask, old mother, and please think me not rude, but what in the name of colors is wrong with you?
I dreamed that you would come. I saw it in the pictures a week ago. All week I've seen patterns of circles in the paintings, all red and gold. Your colors.
Coincidence.
Someday you'll have to get over your foolish selfishness, Lai Tsong. This isn't just about us. I've decided to start doing a better job of things. Perhaps you should take a look at who you are and what you're doing.
My dear old mother. You see, the problem in that challenge is the presumption that I haven't tried to be something other than what I am. Every time I do, disaster is the result.
Well, you now have my commands. For better or worse.
The aged goddess turned away, walking back toward her room of supplicants.
I, for one, am curious to see how you handle them.
Vivenna awoke, sick, tired, thirsty, starving, but alive. She opened her eyes, feeling a strange sensation. Comfort. She was in a comfortable, soft bed. She sat up immediately, her head spun.
I'd be careful. Your body is weak.
Vivenna blinked, fuzzy eyes, focusing on a figure sitting at a table a short distance away, his back to her. He appeared to be eating. A black sword in a silver sheath rested against the table.
You.
Me.
Vivenna looked down at herself. She wasn't wearing her shift anymore, but instead had on a set of soft cotton sleeping garments. Her body was clean. She raised a hand to her hair, feeling that the tangles and mats were gone. It was still white. She felt so strange to be clean.
Did you rape me?
A woman who's been to Dent's bed holds no temptation for me.
I never slept with him.
Fusher turned, face still framed by the patchy, ragged beard. His clothing was far less fine than her own. He studied her eyes.
He had you fooled, didn't he?
Vivenna nodded.
Idiot.
Vivenna nodded again.
The woman who runs this building. I paid her to bathe you, dress you, and change your bedpan. I never touched you.
What happened?
Do you remember the fight on the street?
With your sword. Vaguely. You saved me.
I kept a tool out of Dent's hands. That's all that really matters.
Thank you anyway.
You're welcome.
Why do I feel so ill?
Tremaria. It's a disease you don't have in the Highlands. Insect bites spread it. Probably got it a few weeks before I found you. It stays with you if you're weak.
Vivenna put a hand to her head.
You probably had a pretty bad time lately. What with the dizziness, the dementia, and the hunger.
Yes.
You deserved it.
Vivenna didn't move for a long moment. His food smelled so good. But she'd apparently been fed during the fevers, for she wasn't as famished as she might have expected. Just mildly hungry.
How long was I unconscious?
A week. You should sleep some more.
What are you going to do with me?
The biochromatic breaths you had? You gave them to Dent?
Yes.
Vasha glanced at her, raising an eyebrow.
No. I put them in the shawl I was wearing.
Vasha stood, leaving the room. She considered running. Instead, she got out of the bed and began to eat at his food. A fish, whole and fried. Seafood didn't bother her anymore. Vasha returned, then stopped in the doorway, watching her ravage the fish bones. He didn't force her out of the seat. He simply took the other chair at the table. Finally, he held up the shawl, washed and clean.
This?
Vivenna froze, a bit of fish on her cheek. He set the shawl on the table beside her.
You're giving it back to me?
If there really is breath stored in it, I can't get to it. Only you can.
I don't know the command.
You escaped those ropes of mine without awakening them?
Vivenna shook her head.
I guessed that one.
I should have gagged you better. What do you mean, you guessed it?
It was the first time I'd ever used breath.
That's right. You're of the royal line.
What does that mean?
Vasher just shook his head, pointing toward the shawl.
Your breath to mine. That's the command you want.
Vivenna laid her hand on the shawl.
Your breath to mine.
Immediately, everything changed. Her dizziness went away. Her deadness to the world vanished. Vivenna shook with the pleasure of breath restored. It was so strong that she actually fell from the chair, quivering like a person having a fit with the wonder of it. It was amazing. She could sense life, could sense Vasha making a pocket of color around him that was bright and beautiful. She was alive again. She basked in that for a moment.
It's shocking when you first get it. It's usually not too bad if you take the breath back after only an hour or so. Wait weeks or even a few days, and it's like taking it in for the first time.
Smiling, feeling amazing, she climbed back into the seat and wiped the fish from her face.
My sickness is gone.
Of course. You've got enough breath for at least the third heightening, if I'm reading you right. You'll never know sickness. You'll barely even age. Assuming you manage to hang on to the breath, of course.
Vivenna looked up at him in a panic.
No, I'm not going to force you to give it to me. Though I probably should. You're far more trouble than you're worth, Princess.
Vivenna turned back to the food, feeling more confident. It seemed now as if the last few weeks had been a nightmare. A bubble, surreal, disconnected from her life. Had it really been she who had sat on the street begging? Had she really slept in the rain, lived in the mud? Had she really considered turning to prostitution? She had. She couldn't forget that just because she now had breath again. Had becoming a drab had a hand in her actions? Had the sickness had a part in it too? Either way, the greatest part had been simple desperation.
All right. Time to go.
Go where?
The last time Vivenna had met this man, he'd bound her, forced her to touch that sword of his, and left her gagged. Vasher ignored her concern, tossing a pile of clothing onto the table.
Put this on.
Vivenna picked through it. Thick trousers, a tunic that tucked into them, a vest to go over the tunic, all of various shades of blue. There were undergarments of a less bright color.
That's a man's clothing.
It's utilitarian. I'm not going to waste money buying you fancy dresses, Princess. You'll just have to get used to those.
Vivenna opened her mouth, but then shut it, discarding her complaint. She'd just spent, well, she didn't know how long, running around in a thin, nearly translucent shift that had only covered her to mid-thigh. She took the trousers and shirts gratefully.
Please, I appreciate this clothing, but can I at least know what you intend to do with me?
I have work for you to do.
Vivenna thought of the body's dent that shone her, and of the men Vasher had killed.
You're going to kill again, aren't you?
Dent is working towards something. I'm going to block him.
Dent was working for me. Or at least, he was pretending to. All of those things he did, they were at my command. He was just playing along to keep me complacent.
Vivenna flushed, her hair, responding to her mood for the first time since her shock at seeing Parlin dead, turned red. It felt so surreal. 2 weeks on the street? It felt so much longer. But now, suddenly, she was clean and fed, and somehow she felt like her old self again. Part of it was the breath. The beautiful, wonderful breath. She never wanted to be parted from it again. Not her old self at all. Who was she then? Did it matter?
You laugh at me, but I was just doing the best I could. I wanted to help my people in the upcoming war, fight against Halandrin.
Halandrin isn't your enemy.
It is, and it is planning to march on my people.
The priests have good reason for acting as they do.
Denth said that every man thinks he's doing the right thing.
Denth is too smart for his own good. He was playing with you, Princess.
What do you mean?
Didn't it ever occur to you? Attacking supply caravans, rousing the Idrian poor to rebel, reminding them of Vahir and his promises of freedom, which were so fresh in their minds? showing yourself to thug lords, making them think that Idris was working to undermine Halandran government? Princess, you say every man thinks he's on the right side, that every man who opposed you was deluding himself. Didn't you ever once stop to think that maybe you were the one on the wrong side?
The Venna froze.
Denth wasn't working for you. He wasn't even pretending to. Someone in this city hired him to start a war between Idris and Halandran. And he spent these last few months using you to make it happen. I'm trying to figure out why, who's behind it, and why would a war serve them?
Vivenna sat back, eyes wide. It couldn't be. He had to be wrong.
You were the perfect pawn. You reminded the people in the slums of their true heritage, giving Denth someone to rally them behind. The Court of Gods is a hair's breadth away from marching on your homeland. Not because they hate Idrians, but because they feel like Idris insurgents have already been attacking them. I couldn't believe that you didn't realize what you were doing. I assumed you had to be working with him intentionally to start the war. I underestimated your stupidity. Get rest. I don't know if we have enough time to undo what you've done, but I intend to try.
The clothing felt strange. The trousers pulled at her thighs, making her feel like she was exposed. It was odd not to have the swishing of skirts at her ankles. Vivenna walked beside Vasha without comment, head bowed, hair too short to even put into a braid. She didn't try to regrow it yet. That would draw needed nourishment from her body. They passed through the Idrian slum, and Vivenna had to fight to keep herself from jumping at every sound, looking over her shoulder to see if someone was following her. Was that an urchin wanting to steal the money she'd begged? Was that a group of thugs wishing to sell her to Denth? Were those shadows, gray-eyed, lifeless, come to attack and slaughter? They passed a waif beside the road, a young woman of indeterminable age, but with a soot-covered face and bright eyes that watched them. Vivenna could read the hunger in those eyes. The woman was trying to decide whether or not to try stealing from them. The sword in Vasha's hand was obviously enough to ward the girl away. Vivenna watched her scurry down an alleyway, feeling an odd sense of connection.
Colors? Was that really me?
No. She hadn't even been as capable as that girl. Vivenna had been so naive that she'd been kidnapped without knowing it, then worked to start a war without realizing what she was doing.
Didn't you ever stop to think that maybe you were on the wrong side?
Vivenna wasn't sure what to believe. She'd been taken in so quickly by Denth that she was very hesitant to accept anything this Vasha said. However, she could see signs that some of what he had told her were true. Denth had always taken her to meet with the less reputable elements in the city. Not only were they the ones a mercenary like him would know, but they would be more likely to prefer the chaos of war. Attacking the Halandran supplies wouldn't only make it more difficult to administer the war, it would make the priests more likely to attack while they were still strong. The losses would also serve to make them angrier.
Denth made me think that the war was inevitable. My father thinks it's inevitable. Everyone says it's going to happen.
They're wrong. War between Halandran and Idris has been close for decades, but never inevitable. Getting this kingdom to attack requires convincing the returned, and they're generally too focused on themselves to want something as disruptive as a war. Only an extended effort, first convincing the priests, then getting them to argue until the gods believed them, would be successful.
Vivenna stared ahead down the dirty streets with their colorful refuse.
I really am useless, aren't I?
Vasha glanced over at her.
First, my father sent my sister to marry the God King instead of me. I followed, but I didn't even know what I was doing. Denth took me in on the very first day I was here. When I finally escaped him, I couldn't make it a month on the street without getting robbed, beaten, and then captured. Now you claim that I've single-handedly brought my people to the edge of war.
Don't give yourself too much credit. Denth has been working on this war for a long time. From what I hear, he corrupted the Idrian ambassador himself. Plus, there are elements in the Halandran government, the ones who hired Denth in the first place, who want this conflict to happen.
It was all so confusing. What he said made sense, but death, it made sense too. She needed to know more.
Do you have any guesses who they might be? The ones who hired Denth?
One of the gods, I think. Or perhaps a cabal of them. Maybe a group of priests working on their own.
Why?
How should I know? I can't even figure out who's behind it.
No, not that. I mean, why are you involved? Why do you care?
Because...
Because why?
Look, Princess. I'm not like Denth. I don't have his ability with words, and I don't really like people in the first place. Don't expect me to chat with you, all right?
If he's trying to manipulate me, he has a very strange way of doing it.
Their destination turned out to be a rundown building on the corner of a rundown intersection. Fasha grabbed her arm as she stood there, then pulled her up to the door. A pair of nervous eyes glanced out from behind the door.
Get out of the way.
Fasha pulled Vivenna inside. A young man stumbled back, pressing up against the wall of the hallway and letting Fasha and Vivenna pass. Vivenna felt as if she should be frightened, or at least angry at the treatment. However, after what she had been through, it just didn't seem like much. Fasha let go of her and thumped his way down a set of stairs. Vivenna followed more carefully, the dark stairwell reminding her of the cellar in Dent's hideout. At the bottom, fortunately, the similarities between cellars ended. This one had a wooden floor and walls. A rug sat in the middle of the room with a group of men sitting on it. A couple of them rose as Vasha rounded the stairs.
Vasha, welcome! Do you want something to drink?
No.
The men glanced uncomfortably at each other as Vasha tossed his sword toward the side of the room. Then, he reached back and pulled Vivenna forward.
Hair.
Vivenna hesitated. He was using her just as Denth had. But rather than make him angry, she obliged, changing the color of her hair. Several of the men bowed their heads.
Princess!
Tell them you don't want them to go to war.
I don't. I've never wanted my people to fight Halandrin. They would lose, almost certainly.
The men turned to Vasha.
But she was working with the slumlords. Why did she change her mind?
Well?
Why did she change her mind? Had she changed her mind? It was all too quick.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I've never wanted war. I thought it was inevitable, and so I tried to plan for it. I might have been manipulated, though.
Vasha nodded, then pushed her aside. He left her and joined the men as they sat back on the rug. Vivenna remained where she was.
All right. What are you doing to stop this?
Wait! You expect that to change our minds? A few words from the princess and we're supposed to believe everything you've been telling us?
If Halandrin goes to war, you're dead. Can't you see that? What do you think will happen to the Idrians in these slums? You think things are bad now? Wait until you're seen as enemy sympathizers.
We know that, Vasher. But what do you expect us to do? Submit to Halandrin treatment of us? Cave in and worship their indolent gods?
I don't really care what you do, as long as it doesn't involve threatening the security of the Halandrin government.
Maybe we should just admit that war is coming and fight. Maybe the slumlords are right. Maybe the best thing to do is hope that Idris wins.
They hate us! They treat us worse than they do the statues in their streets! We're less than lifeless to them!
The people are restless, Vasher. Half the men talk of storming the court of gods in anger. The women store up food, waiting for the inevitable. Our youths go out in secret groups, searching the jungles for Khalad's legendary army.
They believe that old myth?
It offers hope. A hidden army, powerful enough that it nearly ended the many war itself.
Believe in myths isn't what frightens me. It's that our youths would even think of using lifeless as soldiers. Khalad's phantoms, bah!
What it means is that we're desperate. The people are angry. We can't stop the riots, Vasher. Not after that slaughter a few weeks back.
That's what they want. Can't you fools see you're giving your enemies perfect scapegoats? Those lifeless that attacked the slum weren't given their orders by the government. Someone slipped a few broken lifeless into the group with orders to kill so that things would turn ugly. The Halandrin theocracy is a top-heavy structure laden with bureaucratic foolishness and inertia. It never moves unless someone pushes it. If we have riots in the street, that will be just what the war faction needs.
It's too late.
No, please.
Please do not say such things.
But, Princess, what can we do? The slumlords rile the people to anger. We have no power compared to them.
You must have some influence. You seem like men of wisdom.
We're family men and workers. We have no riches.
But people listen to you.
Some do.
Then tell them that there are more options. Tell them to be stronger than I was. The Idrians here in the slums, I've seen their strength. If you tell them that they've been used, maybe they can avoid being manipulated further. I don't know if everything this man says is true, but I do know that Idris will not win this war. We should be doing everything we can to prevent a conflict, not encourage one.
Vivenna felt a tear on her cheek, and her hair had grown a pale white.
You can see, I no longer have the control a princess and follower of Ostri should show. I'm a disgrace to you, but please, don't let my failure doom you. The Hallandrins don't hate us. They barely even notice us. I know this is frustrating, but if you make them notice you by rioting and destroying, they will only be shaken into anger against our homeland.
So we should just roll over? Let them step on us? What does it matter if they do it unintentionally? We still get crushed.
No. There must be a better way. And Idrian is their queen now. Perhaps, if we give them time, they will get over their prejudice. We must focus our energies now on keeping them from attacking.
Your words make sense, Princess. But, and forgive my ostentation, those of us here in Hallandran find it difficult to care about Idris much anymore. It failed us before we even left, and now we can't really go back.
We are Idrians, but...
Well, our families here are more important.
If there's war, you'll be treated even worse than you are now.
There are other options. I know of your plight. If I return to my father and explain it, perhaps we can find a way to return you to Idris.
Return to Idris? My family's been here in Hallandran for 50 years now.
Yes, but as long as the King of Idris lives, you have an ally. We can work with diplomacy to make things better for you.
The king doesn't care about us.
I care. We must find a way to bring attention to your suffering without bringing hatred as well. We will find a way. As I said, my sister is married to the God King himself. Perhaps, through her, he can be persuaded to improve the slums. Not because he's afraid of the violence our people might cause, but because of the pity he feels for their situation.
Vivenna continued to kneel, ashamed before these men. Ashamed to be seen in the immodest clothing and with ragged short hair. Ashamed to have failed them so completely.
She is sincere. I will give her that.
I don't know. I still feel it's too late.
If that's the case, what do you have to lose? Think of the lives you could save. I promise, Idris will not forget you any longer. If you make peace with Hallandran, I will ensure that you are seen as heroes back in our homeland.
Heroes, eh? It would be nice to be known as a hero, rather than the ones who left the Highlands to live in brazen Hallandran.
Please.
I'll see what I can do.
As will I.
And I.
And I.
The men stood, shaking hands with Vasher. Vivenna remained kneeling as they left. Eventually, the room was empty save for her and Vasher. He sat down across from her.
Thanks.
I didn't do it for you.
Get up. Let's go. I want to meet with someone else.
Why should I do as you tell me? How do I know that you're not just using me, lying to me, like Denth did?
You don't know.
Vasher went to recover his sword from the corner.
You'll just have to do what I say.
Am I a prisoner, then?
Look, we both agree that war is bad for Idris. I'm not going to take you on raids or make you meet with slum lords. All you have to do is tell people you don't want a war.
And if I'm not willing to do that, will you force me?
Kallus.
Vasher pulled out a bag of something and tossed it at her.
Go. Get back to Idris. I'll do it without you.
Vivenna just continued to sit, staring. He began to walk away.
Denth used me. And the worst part is, I still feel like this must all be just a misunderstanding. I feel that he's really my friend, and that I should go to him and find out why he did what he did. Maybe we're all just confused. But then, I remember the things I saw him do. My friend, Parolin, is dead. Other soldiers sent by my father, stuffed in sacks. I'm so confused.
You're not the first one he's taken in, Princess. Death, he's a subtle one. A man like him can be evil to the core. But if he is charismatic and amusing, people will listen to him. They'll even like him. I'm not like that. I have trouble talking. I get frustrated. I snap at people. It doesn't make me very popular. But I promise you that I won't lie to you. I want to stop this war. That's all that really matters to me right now. I promise you.
I am willing to help, assuming it doesn't involve anything more than telling others that I wish to keep Idris from harm.
Good enough.
Do you really think we can do it? Stop the war?
Maybe. Assuming I can keep myself from beating the colors out of all these Idrians for acting like idiots. There are more places like this. I would show you to the people there.
All right.
There won't be many people at each meeting. I don't have dense connections, and I'm not friendly with important people. The ones I know are workers. We'll have to go visit the Dyvats, perhaps even some of the fields.
I understand. And so, I begin again. I can only hope that this time, I'm on the right side.
Ciri watched Suzebron with affection as he ate a third dessert. Their night's meal lay spread out on the table and floor, some dishes completely devoured, others barely tasted. That first night, when Suzebron had ordered a meal, had started a tradition. Now, they ordered food every night, though only after Ciri did her act for the listening priests. Suzebron claimed to find it very amusing, though she noticed the curiosity in his eyes as he watched her. Suzebron had proven to have quite a sweet tooth now that disapproving priests and their sense of etiquette were absent.
You should probably watch out. If you eat too many of those, you will get fat.
Mm-mm.
No, I won't. Yes, you will. That's the way it works. Not for gods. My mother explained it. Some men become more bulky if they exercise a lot and become fat if they eat a lot. That doesn't happen to returned. We always look the same. Ha! That must be nice. Is food in Idris like this?
He was always so curious about her homeland. She could sense a longing in him, the wish to be free of his palace and see the outside. And yet, he didn't want to be disobedient, even when the rules were harsh.
I really need to work on corrupting you some more. What does that have to do with food? Oh, nothing. But it's true nonetheless. You're far too good a person, Suzebron. Sarcasm? I certainly hope that is it. Oh, only half. Half sarcasm? Is this something new? Oh, no. There's truth sometimes, even in sarcasm. I don't really want to corrupt you, but I do think that you're just too perfectly obedient. You need to be a little more reckless, impulsive, and independent. It's hard to be impulsive when you are locked in a palace surrounded by hundreds of servants. Good point. However, I have been thinking about the things you've said. Please don't be mad at me. All right. What did you do? I talked to my priests with the artisan script. You told them about us? No. Oh, I did tell them I was worried about having a child. I asked why my father died right after he had a child. Good. You're not mad. I was just encouraging you to be more impulsive. I can't complain now. What did they say? They told me not to worry. They said everything would be all right, So I asked them again, and again they gave me a vague answer. It hurts me to write this, but I'm beginning to think that you are right. I've noticed that my guards and awakeners are staying particularly close lately. We even skipped going to the court assembly yesterday. That's a bad sign. I haven't had much luck finding out what's going to happen. I've ordered in 3 other storytellers, but none of them had any better information than what Hoid gave me. You still think it's about the breath I hold? Yes. Remember what I said about my conversation with Trelides? He talked about that breath of yours with reverence. To him, it's something to be passed from generation to generation, like a family tapestry. In one of the children's stories in my book, there is a magic sword. A young boy is given it by his grandfather, and it turns out the sword was an heirloom, the symbol of kingship in the land. What are you saying? Perhaps the entire monarchy of Halandrin is nothing more than a way to guard the breath. The only way to safely pass breath between individuals and generations is to use people as hosts. So they created a dynasty of god kings who could hold the treasure and pass it from father to son. Huh. Well, that would mean that the god king is more of a vessel than I am, a sheath for a magic weapon. Exactly. They had to make my family kings because of how much breath was in that treasure. And they had to give it to a returned. Otherwise, their king and their gods might have competed for power. Perhaps it seems awfully convenient that the god king always bears a stillborn son who becomes returned. Unless the next god king isn't really the son of the current one. Austrey, god of colors, that's it! Somewhere in the kingdom, a baby died and returned. That's why it's so urgent that I get pregnant. They already have the next god king. Now they just need to keep up the farce. They marry me to you, hope for a child as quickly as possible, then switch the baby for the returned one. Then they kill me and somehow take my breaths away and give it to this child who can become the next god king. Wait. Do infants ever return? Yes, but how does an infant return in a way that's heroic or virtuous or anything like that?
Susabron hesitated, and she could tell he didn't have an answer for her. Infant returned. Among her own people, they didn't believe that a person was chosen to return because of some virtue they exemplified. That was a Halandrin belief. To her, it seemed a hole in their theology, but she didn't want to challenge Susabron on it further.
Well, that doesn't really matter. The real question is more important. If the god kings are just vessels to hold breath, then why bother changing them? Why not just leave one man holding the breath? I don't know. It doesn't seem to make sense, does it? Maybe they're worried about keeping a single god king captive that long. Children are easier to control, perhaps. If that's the case, they would want to change more often. Some of those god kings lasted centuries. Of course, it could just have to do with how rebellious they think their king is. I do everything I'm supposed to. You just complained that I'm too obedient. Compared to me, you are. Maybe from their viewpoint, you're a wild man. After all, you did hide that book your mother gave you. And then you learn to write. Perhaps they know you well enough to realize that you weren't going to stay docile. So now that they have an opportunity to replace you, they're intending to take it. Maybe.
Susabron leaned back, staring up at the dark ceiling. Ciri watched him, noting the look of sadness in his eyes.
What?
He just shook his head.
Oh, please, what is it? If what you say is true, then the woman who raised me was not my mother. I would have been born to someone random out in the countryside. The priests would have taken me once I returned, then raised me in the palace as the son of the god king they'd just killed.
Seeing him in pain made her insides twist. Ciri moved around the blanket, sitting beside him, putting her arms around him and resting her head on his arm.
She's the only person to have shown me real kindness in my life. The priests, they revere me and care for me, or at least I assume that they did. However, they never really loved me. Only my mother did that. And now, I'm not sure I even know who she is. If she raised you, she's your mother. It doesn't matter who gave birth to you.
Susa Braun didn't respond to that.
Maybe she was your real mother. If they were going to bring you to the palace in secret, they might as well bring your mother too. Who better to care for you? Perhaps you are right. Though it now seems suspicious to me that she would die as she did. She was one of the few who could have told me the truth.
This seemed to make him even more sad, and Ciri pulled him closer, laying her head on his chest.
Please, tell me of your family. Oh, my parents were often frustrated with me, but they did love me, do love me. They just wanted me to do what they thought was right, and, well, the more time I spend in Halandrin, the more I wish I had listened to them, at least a little bit. Rigger was right above me. I was always getting him into trouble. He was the heir, and I had him thoroughly corrupted, at least until he got old enough to appreciate his duties. He's a little like you, very kind-hearted, always trying to do what is right. He didn't eat as many sweets, though.
Susa Braun smiled faintly, squeezing her shoulder.
Then there was Fafin. I didn't really know her that well. She joined a monastery when I was still quite young, and I was glad. It's seen as a duty in Idris to provide at least one child for the monasteries. They're the ones who grow the food for the needy and take care of things that need to be done around the city. Pruning, washing, painting, anything to be of service. A little like a king, living a life to serve others. Sure, only they don't get locked up and they can stop doing it if they want. Either way, I'm glad it was Fafin and not me. I would have gone crazy living as a monk. They have to be pious all the time and are supposed to be the least ostentatious in the city. Not a good match for your hair, definitely. Though it's stopped changing colors so often lately, I've had to learn to control it better. People can read me too easily by it. Here.
Ciri changed it from black to yellow, and he smiled, running his fingers through its lengthy locks.
After Fafin, there's just the eldest, Vivenna. She's the one you were supposed to marry. She spent her entire life preparing to move to Halandrin. She must hate me, growing up knowing she would have to leave her family and live with a man she didn't know. Oh, nonsense! Vivenna looked forward to it. I don't think she can feel hatred. She's always just calm and careful and perfect. Oh, I sound bitter, don't I? I don't mean to. I really do love Vivenna. She was always there, watching out for me. It seemed to me that she made too many efforts to cover up for me. My big sister pulling me out of trouble, scolding me calmly, and then seeing that I wasn't punished as much as I should have been. They're all probably at home right now, worried sick about me. You sound like you're worried about them. I am. I've been listening to the priests argue in the court. It doesn't sound good, Seb. There are lots of Idrians in the city, and they're being very reckless. The city guard was forced to send troops into one of the slums a few weeks back. That isn't helping reduce tensions between our two countries.
Susa Braun didn't write a response, but instead wrapped his arm around her again, pulling her close. It felt good to be held against him. Very good.
I was wrong, you know. About what? About one of the things I said earlier. I wrote that my mother was the only person to ever show me love and kindness. That's not true. There's been another. You didn't have to show me kindness. You could have hated me for taking you from your family and your homeland. Instead, you taught me to read, befriended me, loved me.
Susa Braun stared at her. She stared at him. Then, hesitant, he leaned down and kissed her.
Oh, dear.
A dozen objections popped into Ciri's head. She found it difficult to move, to resist, or to do anything. Anything other than kiss him back. She felt hot. She knew that they needed to stop, lest the priesthood get exactly what they were waiting for. She understood all of these things, yet those objections began to seem less and less rational as she kissed him. Susa Braun paused, obviously uncertain what to do next. Ciri looked up at him, then pulled him down to kiss him again, feeling her hair bleed to a deep, passionate red. At that point, she stopped caring about anything else. Susa Braun didn't know what to do. Ciri pulled off her shift.
I need to get better at controlling my impulses. Some other time.
That night, Lightsong dreamed of Taetalir burning. Of the God King dead, and of soldiers in the streets, of lifeless killing people in colorful clothing, and of a black sword. Vivenna choked down her meal. The dried meat tasted strongly of fish, but she had learned that by breathing through her mouth, she could ignore much of the flavor. She ate every bite, then washed the taste away with a few mouthfuls of warmed, boiled water. She was alone in the room. It was a small chamber built into the side of a building in the slums. Vasher had paid a few coins for a day in it, though he wasn't there at the moment. He'd rushed off to deal with something. Vivenna leaned back, food consumed, closing her eyes. She'd reached the point where she was so exhausted that she'd actually found it difficult to sleep. The fact that the room was so small didn't help. She couldn't even stretch out all the way. Vasher hadn't been exaggerating when he'd said that their work would be rigorous. Stop after stop, she spoke with the Idrians, consoling them, begging them not to push Halandrin to war. There were no restaurants as there had been with Denth, no dinners with men in fine clothing and guards. Just group after group of tired, working-class men and women. Many of them weren't rebellious, and a large number of them didn't even live in the slums. But they were part of the Idrian community in Taetalir, and they could influence how their friends and family felt. She liked them, empathized with them. She felt far better about her new efforts than she had about her work with Denth, and so far, as she could tell, Vasher was being honest with her. She had decided to trust those instincts. That was her decision, and that decision meant helping Vasher, for now. Vasher didn't ask her if she wanted to continue. He simply led her from location to location, expecting her to keep up. And so she did, meeting with the people and begging their forgiveness, despite how emotionally draining it was. She wasn't certain if she could repair what she had done, but she was willing to try. This determination seemed to gain her some respect from Vasher. It was much more reluctantly given than Denth's respect had been.
Denth was fooling me the entire time.
It was still hard to remember that fact. Part of her didn't want to. She leaned forward, staring at the bland wall in front of her in the box-like room. It was a good thing that she'd been working herself so hard lately. It kept her from thinking about things. Discomforting things. Who was she? How did she define herself now that everything she'd been and everything she'd tried had collapsed around her? She couldn't be Vivenna, the confident princess, anymore. That person was dead, left behind in that cellar with Parlin's bloody corpse. Confidence had come from naivete. Now she knew how easily she had been played, She knew the cost of ignorance, and she had glimpsed the grim truths of real poverty. Yet, she also couldn't be that woman. The waif of the streets, the thief, the beaten-down wretch. That wasn't her. She felt as if those weeks had been a dream, brought on by the stress of isolation and trauma of her betrayal, fueled by becoming a drab and being suffocated by disease. To pretend that was the real her would be to parody those who truly lived on the streets, the people she'd hidden among and tried to imitate. Where did that leave her? Was she the penitent, quiet princess who knelt with bowed head pleading with the peasants? This, too, was partially an act. She really did feel sorry. However, she was using her stripped pride as a tool. That wasn't her. Who was she? Ivana stood up, feeling cramped in the tiny room. The neighborhood outside wasn't quite a slum, but it wasn't rich either. It was simply a place where people lived. There were enough colors along the street to be welcoming, but the buildings were small and held a number of families each. She walked along the street, careful not to stray too far from the room Vasher had rented. She passed trees, admiring their blooms. Who was she really? What was left when one stripped away the princess and the hatred of Halandrin? She was determined. That part of her she liked. She'd forced herself to become the woman she needed to be in order to marry the God King. She'd worked hard, sacrificing, to reach her goal. She was also a hypocrite. Now she knew what it was to be truly humble. Compared to that, her former life seemed more brash and arrogant than any colorful skirt or shirt. She did believe in Austri. She loved the teachings of the five visions. Humility, sacrifice, seeing another's problems before your own. And she was beginning to think that she, along with many others, had taken this belief too far, letting her desire to seem humble become a form of pride itself. She now saw that when her faith had become about clothing instead of people, it had taken a wrong turn. She wanted to learn to awaken. Why? What did that say about her? That she was willing to accept a tool her religion rejected just because it would make her powerful? No, that wasn't it. At least she hoped it wasn't it. Looking back on her recent life, she felt frustrated at her frequent helplessness. And that felt like part of whom she really was. The woman who would do anything to be sure she wasn't helpless. That was why she'd studied so hard with the tutors in Idris. That was also why she wanted to learn how to awaken. She wanted as much information as she could and wanted to be prepared for the problems that might come at her. She wanted to be capable. That might be arrogant, but it was the truth. She wanted to learn everything she could about how to survive in the world. The most humiliating aspect of her time in Tae Talir was her ignorance. She wouldn't make that mistake again. She nodded to herself.
Time to practice, then.